Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. I'm Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman.
Tonight we're going to talk about Maria the Jewess, or Maria Prophetissima, Maria Prophetissa, Miriam the Prophetess. She had many names, and it's hard to...
Sounds like you have a question for some of these, actually.
Well...
It's not easy. She's got a lot of pseudonyms.
Yeah, because the thing is that Maria, should we call her Miriam? Maria?
Let's go with Miriam.
All right, so... Miriam falls into the category of possibly mythological. It's hard to say. So we know her from Zosimos of Panopolis, who we've done a podcast on, right? So he's the great Gnostic Christian, maybe Jewish, but certainly kind of Hermetic and Neoplatonic. I mean, you know, he's definitely a mystic. And we only know her from his writings. So he quotes her. Even his sources aren't clear. I mean, they say that she may have lived from somewhere between the 1st and 3rd centuries AD, but some people think that it actually might be Miriam because of the sister of Moses instead of Mary or Maria. So it's hard to say if she was even real or not, but she's attributed with the invention of several kinds of chemical apparati, maybe?
Let's go with that.
So she's considered to be the first non-fictitious alchemist. Again, it's hard to put your finger on if there was a real person or several real people that kind of make up this legend of her, but Zosimos does quote her at length and talk about her quite a bit, and he describes several of her experiments and instruments. In his writings, she's always mentioned as living in the past tense, so, you know, someone who came before him, and he's from the 4th century. And she's said to be one of the sages. Okay.
Well, you know, very interesting that, you know, here's a woman alchemist. So there has to be something said to this. I don't see any other reason why someone would make her up in Zosimos of Panopolis, giving the citation of who she was. I think that
people,
there was something substantial there.
People tend to think she was real, just whether it was one person or more than one, or who exactly she was, it's impossible to know. All her writings are lost to us.
One such person was George Sincelus, a Byzantine chronicler of the 8th century. He presented Miriam as a teacher of Democritus, who she met in Memphis, Egypt, at the time of Pericles. So this 10th century Kitab al-Firist of Ibn al-Nadim cites her as one of the 52 most famous alchemists, knowing the preparation of the Caput Mortem. The Roman philosopher Marino called her Mary the Prophetess, and the Arabs knew her as the daughter of Plato. So, you know, no small nicknames for her at this point. The name that in Western alchemical texts was reserved for the white sulfur. So,
yeah, the daughter of Plato.
Yeah. So, you know, so she did have some gravitas, evidently, have these nicknames.
Well, it's funny because I didn't make the connection before, really, because I'm doing research on another mythical alchemist, or one that might have fit more than one person's bill. And he was also known as a teacher of Democritus. So it's kind of interesting that Democritus was, you know, a real philosopher. So, yeah, it's interesting here that they kind of give him different different roles in training real philosophers, or kind of mix them in with definite events. So it's hard to say.
In the Alexander book, the second part, the Azerbaijani Persian poet Nizami, Maria is a Syrian princess in this issue and visits the court of Alexander the Great, and learns from Aristotle in the year between 384 BC and 322 BC, among other things, the art of making gold.
Mm-hmm.
There's your alchemy connection.
And this would put her like 400 years before that. So, yeah, the other alchemist I was looking up was Austanis, and he was like some Persian, but he shows up as, again, like either someone that trained Alexander the Great, and then in a very different time period was in Xerxes' court as they invaded Greece, and in a different time period, I mean, you know, somewhere else he was like in Syracuse,
So you can see the mythical sort of, you know, connections here.
I think that like Ostanis and obviously Miriam or Maria was a very common name. So if there was a couple people that were maybe learned or something, they all just kind of meshed them together. Just like Geber and Pseudo-Geber can't be told apart at all times. Or Democritus also had a pseudo-Democritus who would write – it was a different person but would sign his name Democritus. So they often get mixed together.
Their names onto something that was known to be connected maybe to alchemy or to science.
History back then wasn't what it is today, no. I guess. So to get into some of her supposed writings – again, we don't have any extant copies. I mean, we can't actually see this per se, but a lot of the quotes that are credited to her are basically hermetic in nature. And one of the most kind of notable one is an extract by a Christian, or you know, quoted by a Christian philosopher named the Dialogue of Mary and Eros of the Magistry of Hermes, in which he kind of describes basically the basis of alchemy, leucosis, which is whitening, and xanthosis, which is yellowing. So some of the steps in making gold, you know, basically. And basically what he's describing, and this is, again, a quote from Miriam, so one was made by grinding and the other by calcination. So this is basically the first description we have of an acid salt and or, you know, other acids, which we now could identify as acidic acid. There's several recipes for making gold attributed to her, and one from a vegetable such as the root of the mandragora. So there you go, all kinds of stuff attributed to her. Some of the things are a little bit cryptic. I'll give you a couple examples, like the union of opposites. Okay, this is supposedly a quote from Miriam, which is, and you see this all over the place. So it's actually, if it's attributed to her, this is saying something about her. And this is, you join the male and the female, and you will find what is sought. For instance, like the union of opposites is
yin and yang
all over the place in alchemical texts and elsewhere, like you mentioned. The other one actually has her name in it. It's the Axiom of Maria, which is one becomes two, two becomes three, and out of the third comes the one as the fourth.
Makes sense. yeah. I'm with you.
I'm not a huge fan of Carl Jung with his theories of alchemy. I mean, Carl Jung had some interesting theories elsewhere, but he uses as a metaphor for the process of wholeness and individuality. So even Carl Jung at least studied some of the things that were supposedly quotes from Miriam. So it's interesting. She's kind of come a long way, that whether she was real or not, or if we don't have any extant copies, she definitely has a reputation.
Well, it's interesting. You know, every podcast, you kind of learn something new, that the Jungian thought was actually inspired by some of this from Miriam. You know, we're talking about some ancient philosophy. So, very interesting. So Miriam is said to have discovered hydrochloric acid. You can kind of believe that. That's actually asking a lot to believe that. But through this, it's not really accepted by most science texts. We're going to mention that tonight.
Yeah. She has a reputation for it, whether it happened or not. So,
Mary, we're going to go with one of those three, alongside Agatha Damon, Pseudo-Democritus, and Hermes Trismegistus, also had been mentioned by Zosimus of Panopolis in this descriptions pertaining devices such as Trabicos, Kerotakis, and the bath, although her alleged contributions are disputed and not very, very clear. So what exactly is a Trabicos? A Trabicos is a kind of alembic device. Now, you might see this when you go into a chemistry shop or something from chemistry class. It's just a big glass distillation apparatus, and you'll see that it's got a wider bottom to a more narrow top. And you know, this is attributed creation to Mary the Jewess, who was said to be the inventor. Mm-hmm. You know, Zosimus credits her with this first description of this instrument. So yeah, you know, we might be stretching a little bit, but you know, in her writings, as quoted by Zosimus, she recommends that the copper or bronze used to create the tubes be the same thickness of a frying pan, and the joint between these tubes and the still head still be sealed with the flour paste to be able to keep what was ever inside separate from the outside.
So basically, we're describing a glass sphere sort of thing with three things sticking out the top.
Yeah, I think we've all seen this in chemistry class. Absolutely. And so she's supposed to be the inventor of this.
So it's been around for that long. It's weird. It's like almost like, you know, distilling equipment. But and then Kerotakis is a device, and it's basically to collect vapors. And so it's also used in alchemy, and it's part of her recipes. And the main thing here is that it's airtight. If you want to kind of get an idea of what this is, you can look up it's called a Soxhlet extractor. It's Soxhlet, which is based on this advice. And basically what it is that, so all the joints are sealed, and this is actually where we get the term hermetically sealed from this specific advice. So again, it's like kind of a bowl at the bottom, and it's got two arms going up. And so as you're heating something and something, you know, cooks, then the steam condenses at the top, and then it kind of collects that vapor. So that's basically all it is. What they were trying to do was kind of imitate the process going on, at least in their heads, of what they thought the process was of the formation of gold in the earth. So like the natural formation of gold, which now we know is not how gold is formed. But that's what they were after. And I mentioned the Soxhlet extractor. So this is actually, that was an invention by Franz von Soxhlet in 1879. And it's still based off of this Kerotakis, all right?
You know, another thing that Mary is credited with is something called a water bath, or what's mentioned as the bain-marie. It's an extensive use of a chemical process. Now, what it does is it uses heat, but in a gentle way to do it uniformly, that there's not one part that's hotter than the other.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So it heats up at a you know, kind of a sort of a set rate, and you know, you might see this a little bit when you're, you know, in cooking, actually. You know, you don't want certain areas of the pan to heat faster than the other, and you certainly don't want anything to be burned at the bottom. So you kind of heat the apparatus at a more even flow. So this bain-marie is what that is, and this term was introduced by Arnold of Villanova back in the 14th century AD.
Yep, and that's basically all we have on her, because there's not a lot of information to have.
It's great to mention, because we don't have a whole lot of women alchemists that we're focusing on here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she is kind of in the mists of history, but you know, we're bringing her up to the forefront because I think mainly Zosimos of Panopolis is basically giving her her creds, man. She's, you know, he wouldn't be saying this about this type of Maria or Miriam if basically she never really existed.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things on researching the Zosimos podcast, was that we went with him because he was maybe the first where we have extant copies of, you know, something that we can really get our hands on. But he was mentioning older people. I mean, we talked about Hermes Trismegistus, but he's clearly, you know, has a basis in myth. Whereas Miriam and, you know, some of these, like we'll do one on Ostanis, and again, that one will be very short because there's not a whole lot known. In fact, there's probably like four or five people called that. But these are interesting figures. So we definitely wanted to give them, you know, their own episode also. So, yeah, there you have it. I think we'll be doing a couple more of these.
Well, you know,
they'll be shorter.
You know, one thing, Travis, I think you want with this podcast, with this Alchemist podcast, is to get a wide swath of what it means, what it means to be in alchemy, and what it means to what these people have given to alchemy to make it what it was and what it is, and to see the evolution. And this is part of that.
Well, the evolution part is funny because, so she's either from, you know, 300 BC, if some of the legends are correct, or at least from 100 AD or 300 AD, and yet we have pretty modern lab equipment. And so in some ways, and she already has, you know, some of the recipes that they followed in the Middle Ages and even up through, you know, the early modern period were based on some of her kind of axioms and ideas. And so it's really interesting to see that there's a strong basis of alchemy that was there from what we call the beginning, like the 4th century, basically. And some things changed, but a lot of it really stayed the same for, you know, a good 1,000 years.
I think it's probably a strong case to think that this is not just one person we're talking about, with several different ways of saying Mary. Mary, Miriam, and
that could
Maria.
Be a safe bet.
I think it's a safe bet that this maybe was a conglomeration of several different ladies throughout history at different time periods that were making contributions.
Yep. Well, if you guys have any further information on Miriam, then by all means, send me an email. If I come across any further reading, we might revisit the topic. Some of these are just hard to get my hands on some good, solid reading that's not, I don't know how to say it, kind of new age, weird.
Let's just say certified. You know, yeah. In some sense, it has some foundation and scholastic learning.
Yeah, you know? because a lot of this stuff has taken on. You know, they would grasp one of these figures, and then, you know, especially in the 19th century kind of occult revival, they would grasp one of these figures and turn them into something totally different again. So it's hard to get sources that are not related to that. So, but if I come across some, we might revisit this. And if you have any ideas or more information, by all means, let us know. So thanks for listening.
Thanks. Take care.
You've been listening to the History of Alchemy podcast with Travis Dow and Pete Coleman. For more information about this episode, and other information about alchemy, alchemists, and related subjects, visit historyofalchemy.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, review, and don't forget to rate us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments, ideas, and corrections to podcast@historyofalchemy.com or get in touch via Facebook on the History of Alchemy podcast page or Twitter at Alchemy Podcast. Tune in to our sister podcast all about the Czech Republic, Bohemicon, which is also available on iTunes or on bohemicon.com. Until next time on the History of Alchemy podcast, thank you for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.